This is Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. And I think we are joined by Tony Leah. He is the author of The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike. And by the way, he can be found on, I think it's Solonet. He'll correct me in a moment. And he's also written a kind of an important thesis called the March Thesis. It's now April, so I guess it's being executed. Tony, are you there?
I am, Phil. Hi.
It is Solonet, right?
Yes, solonet.ca.
And the March Thesis can be found there?
Yes, it can.
Great. The March Thesis is a an outline of what you, as a veteran of the labor movement and a member of once the auto workers, once the Canadian auto workers, and now Unifor, what the union movement ought to be doing and saying at this time. Let's start with the problems, particularly in your sector. We're hearing about layoffs. And how extensive is it? How serious? And how are the leaders reacting on both sides of the border, or all sides of Mexico too? Pardon me.
Yeah, both sides of both borders. Yeah. The layoffs have started. They're not extensive yet, but there's been cutbacks in some of the plants. The Stellantis plant in Windsor has been shut for 2 weeks. There's a very serious shutdown of the GM plant in Ingersoll, which makes commercial vans, electric commercial vans, but it's very small volume. But they've been told that they're going to be shut until October. They currently operate on two shifts, and the GM's plan for October is to reduce that to one shift, so a layoff of half the people there. There's been layoffs in the United States because the industry is very integrated. And suppliers, parts of the vehicles crisscross the border. And so the shutdown of Stellantis in Windsor led to layoffs in Michigan. And the whole issue is one of incredible anxiety and uncertainty, because nobody knows for sure where Donald Trump is going to settle at the end of the day. He changes his mind and his directives day by day. But what's clear is that he's trying to create a sense of tariffs being protecting jobs in the United States. And anybody that buys into that buys into workers fighting each other for the jobs. And I think that's the basic problem with supporting tariffs, is that it creates this idea that there are a certain number of jobs, and currently some of them are in Canada and some of them are in Mexico, and those jobs have to be taken to the United States. So you have to take those jobs away from the workers that are currently doing them. And that's, unfortunately, the current position of the UAW. And it's backwards.
Yeah, Sean Fain became a kind of culture hero because he led a democratic movement against an entrenched, corrupt leadership. Most of them now in jail, or many of them, I shouldn't say most, but a number of them. And so he was given a lot of space, and he's had a lot of wonderful ideas. But the election cycle of America, which seems to disrupt all life, seemed to get him off his game a bit. And he endorsed Biden, and he called Trump a scab. Then Trump came in and said, okay, tariffs on the autos from Canada, Mexico, everywhere. And he said, oh, I'm for that.
Yes.
You must have been shocked.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't say shocked, but very disappointed. because there seemed to be a real opportunity for rebuilding solidarity between auto workers in Canada, the United States, and beyond. with the election of Sean Fain and the reform group that that were elected a couple of years ago. And that door has largely been slammed shut with the, you know, the current situation. And it seems clear that there's been no consultation or discussion between the leadership of auto workers unions in Mexico, United States, and Canada. And so the, you know, any idea of solidarity or working together or trying to arrive at common goals has been put aside in favor of this idea of narrow nationalism in the United States of we have to protect American jobs. And it's unfortunate. Sean Fain has tried more recently to point out his criticisms of the many of the actions of the Trump government. You know, so that
Sean has members who are being losing their jobs at universities. People bringing who he has leaders who local leaders who are supporting the Palestinians who've been fired and suddenly. By the way, I don't think he's addressing that aspect of it. Maybe he is.
He is. No, I would say that, you know, that he has tried recently to highlight that issue more. And in his last Facebook Live address, he mentioned the names of UAW members and leaders who are being caught up in this repression by the Trump government of anybody who dares speak in support of Palestine. And you're right, the leader of a UAW local was fired the day before they were supposed to go into negotiations with the university.
You notice how they leverage the opportunity?
Yes.
They're facing a union and with demands, and all of a sudden they fire somebody for a political issue of freedom, which involves, I think, the freedom. The Americans have a First Amendment. I don't know if anybody ever read it, but they do have freedom of speech on paper.
On paper, you know, but if you're
they're doing great on paper.
If they have put you on a plane and you're in a prison in El Salvador, it's hard to exercise that right.
Yes.
And so I give credit to Sean Fain and the UAW for speaking out on those issues and calling for workers and others to rally against them. But it's hard to square that with supporting tariffs, which divide workers and which lead to you know the most negative consequences, because we're seeing a trade war developing and a trade war that's very nasty, escalating and very close to leading to the other kind of war which historically has happened, and that's of no benefit to workers in the United States or anywhere else. And I think that's the fundamental problem. And tariffs doesn't address the real issue. One UAW member who took issue with the policy of his own leadership pointed out, what about the capitalists? They're not being discussed because it's devolved into, you know, is the job going to be in Mexico or is it going to be in the U.S.? And that's the wrong question. The question should be, who's making the decisions? Who's running these plants? And how are they making those decisions?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Somebody should be pointing out that these automakers, you know, the American-based companies, GM and Ford and Stellantis, don't even build cars in the United States. They don't build cars for consumers. They don't build affordable cars. They build massive pickup trucks and SUVs because they make more profit on them. And they're incredibly expensive, you know. So, meanwhile,
it's interesting. That was Henry Ford. Henry Ford got in business by saying, "I'm gonna make a cheap car." Well, the first auto industry began. It was everything. Those were luxury automobiles. That was only the ultra rich. And then Ford said, "I'll make one that everybody can buy."
Yeah, and they're
the Flivver King.
Their short-sighted policy at the moment is build a $100,000 pickup truck and make $25,000 profit. Mm-hmm. And it works for them while they can sell those vehicles and export them. And by the way, right now, those companies export vehicles around the world, mostly to Canada, some to Mexico, but to other countries as well. So the tariff war is going to have unforeseen consequences. If the United States exports almost 2 million vehicles a year to Canada. So if Canada has countervailing tariffs, then vehicles will stop being built in Canada, frankly, if those tariffs remain, and won't be shipped to the U.S. But U.S.-built vehicles won't be shipped to Canada. Canadians will be buying vehicles built in other countries, Europe, Japan, Korea, maybe China, if they ever wake up and get rid of the 100% tariff.
You really put your foot on the third rail. I got to ask you this. Hovering over all of the us, and particularly the righteous positioning by Unifor and UAW, we have to really worry about us, and the tariffs are awful, and it's going to hurt us in the case of Canada, or just the other guy saying it's okay to have them. But both Unifor and UAW thought it was just fine to put 100% tariffs on Chinese electrical vehicles.
Yep. The
100%, and nobody here batted an eye. That's fine. We can do that. That was before this heavy rain hit us.
Yeah, that was last year, and Lana Payne, the president of Unifor, said she would support any action that the Canadian government took against China, and applauded the 100% tariff. I guess she would have supported it if it was 200%, but it's almost insane from the point of view of workers around the world. And if we believe that workers mm-hmm. have common interests and should support each other, who benefits from that?
If it's unfair, it's being done to us. Why is it fair to do it to the Chinese?
That's right.
Makes it work is racism or Cold War bigotry. But mention Norway. What's going on in Norway with the Chinese and electrical vehicles?
Norway is one of the countries where people are buying more and more vehicles assembled in China because of a combination of things. They support electric vehicles very strongly, and the Chinese have mastered the production of affordable, high-quality, advanced electric vehicles. They have gone leaps and bounds ahead of the North American and European manufacturers because they have the ability to plan in a more long-term, consistent way for what they want to achieve. And they wanted to achieve advanced technology, affordable electric vehicles. And they've done it. And they now are outproducing everybody and outselling everybody.
But the Norwegians are showing, they're open. They say, okay, so we'll buy that. So why can't we have somebody here with sufficient backbone to say, yeah, we'll buy that too? By the way, we'll invite them to build the cars here.
Yes. I would point out that Chinese assembled vehicles are gaining a very high percentage of the sales in Mexico as well. They're not barred from there. And they're considering opening assembly plants in Mexico.
Yeah, I haven't, in trying to follow it, I was quite startled to learn, because you know how the EU is actually dancing around now. They're scared too, but they haven't made the big move, which is to say, well, we'll just flat do business with not just China, but South Korea, others, because the Trump strategy is to actually close doors in every direction except the U.S. Mm-hmm. But there are countries, and it seems, frankly, it's an anomaly to me, that Norway, which is kind of a rock-solid Western colonial part of the system, but they've decided, no, we're going to buy these, we're going to permit the sale, and we're going to do business.
Yeah. You know, and when you see that it's possible to produce a high-quality electric vehicle for under $30,000, or in some cases as low as $10,000, you have to wonder, why are we cutting ourselves off from that?
Yeah, and the only reason answer is Cold War, right?
It is. It's a very bitterly Cold War approach, and it seems to be designed to ramp up hostilities with China.
Yeah,
not in the interest of workers.
Yeah, a concerning issue I have with that is that so many of the leaders who say they're going to stand up to Trump, and by God, Doug Ford and all that, and the Liberal Party and all these people. But when it comes to China, they're still carrying out the policy that was assigned to us by the U.S. administration, Biden or Trump, which is that we're going to treat China as an enemy. And so they go on laboring on, I guess, they, what do you say, is working in, is it Maggie's farm? But why the heck are we sending warships between off the coast of Taiwan, which belongs to China, in a provocative way, at a time when that government for whom we're carrying out the mission says it's going to take us over? I mean, isn't that the definition of madness?
It is, and is very destructive, self-destructive. There was no significant importation of vehicles from China before Canada imposed 100% tariff. So the only reason they did so was at the behest of the United States government. And one of the consequences of that is countervailing tariffs against Canadian canola, which is projected to cost Canadian farmers $8 billion. So none of it makes sense from the point of view of ordinary people in these countries getting caught up in these wars and thinking that they should be supporting the imposition of tariffs against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what we really need is somebody to say, let's get together as workers from these countries and figure out how we can support each other. And we should mention, it doesn't get enough attention that some unions have called for that. At least the steel workers and the International Association of Machinists, which have members in Canada and the United States, have both said that tariffs against Canada are wrong, and they oppose them.
Mm-hmm.
They are not as clear on reaching out to workers in Mexico, unfortunately, but at least they are not falling in line with the Trump government and cheering for the tariffs. So that should be pointed out, and that should be encouraged.
Absolutely. There are people on the left, as they call it, writing about this who always skip over the steel workers and the machinists. By the way, the steel workers, I believe, are endorsing the NDP. There's hardly a union in Canada that's actually coming out for the NDP now because of this crazy times.
Yes. Yep.
But the steel workers are.
They are, and that makes a difference in at least a number of ridings where NDP candidates get elected because of that support.
Yeah, labor support. Tony Leo, author of The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike, and he's at Solonet. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Phil.
Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and Steve Fruitman of 33, 45, 78 is coming up.